You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Well, we left our homes up in Bristol Bay for the waters of Miami shore. With a hippo at the helm and our severance pay, we fly the pirate flag once more. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we get wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. Pirate radio. Well, the ship is a wreck, shit stains the deck as Michael Hollow's fellas make more. And Billy is a worry that he's got the scurvy, cause Chris ate all the limes in store. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we get wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. Pirate radio. Now Roy is a chum when he's on the rum, he's the glue when we spring a leak. And Stu is a mess, he does less and less, and Greg's sounding worse each week. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we get wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. Pirate radio. Someone yelled ahoy, who the hell's cabin boy? Somebody named Tony, who knows? Once we got the skip, well, a mean jump ship, cause he knew we would sail to gold. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we got wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. For the pirate radio.
You know what I did yesterday?
What?
I watched a college basketball game.
How is it?
It was fine. Virginia, Florida State.
Oh, yeah. God. Well, wait a minute. They played each other?
Yeah, yeah. Big game inside the ACC. Florida State, good team. Leonard Hamilton.
Yes, there it is. Leonard Hamilton and them boys. Leonard Hamilton and them Nigerian boys every once in a while. Yeah.
Virginia is still boring.
Those Nigerian nine-footers that he finds.
You want me to blow your mind? Virginia is still the defending champs. How about that?
Excellent point. I saw Duke's not good, and players are just opting out.
North Carolina's not any good either.
Nope.
I figured if Miami's hanging tough with these teams and beating them, they can't be that good.
Miami's not any good either.
I know.
Terrible.
I know. Miami's not good. No one in South Florida right now is particularly good outside of the Ice Cats.
Yep.
Coach Q got them purring.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That was the first win in Tampa Bay in 5 years?
That's correct.
That's the most shocking stat outside of Blake Griffin hasn't dunked in 2 years.
I couldn't believe that stat. I could not believe that stat when I saw it. No, that was stunning. Blake Griffin has not dunked a basketball since December of 2019.
That's the best stat of the day I've ever heard.
I can't believe it. Since December 12th of 2019, Blake Griffin is not dunked. And what that is just getting to a nowhere city and a nowhere place that you don't want to be and just saying, I'm going to take jumpers for two straight years. There's not even going to be a fast break dunk in my future. I'm not even going to pick up just a stray loose ball and dunk. It's just, I'm going to take jumpers.
Did we ruin Stan Van Gundy?
He's so unhappy.
Did we ruin him?
He's so unhappy. And
that was a good job.
Yeah.
It's not anymore. What's going on here? Zion's playing well. I can't for the life of me. His job was keep Zion healthy and have Zion perform and go next level. Zion has done all those things.
Blake Griffin is scheduled to make $37 million next year. He can't dunk?
Can't dunk. Well, he's just choosing not to.
That I had to reread that stat and then go look it up because I simply didn't believe. I thought the internet was fooling me. There's simply no way that Blake Griffin can play 2 years worth of basketball. It's not really 2 years. It's sort of a year and a few months, but still.
It's a nice little trick.
But it's still ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's still absurd that he's playing basketball games and not dunk.
If you would have told me it's been 3 weeks since Blake Griffin's last dunk, I would have been a liar.
There was a time where someone said he went 2 games without dunking.
Yeah, it would be shocking. Right.
Yes.
There was a time that you were scared to draft him because all he could do was dunk.
Dunk, you mean?
Yeah.
Long weekend.
Yeah.
Super Bowl weeks. That's because his mom died.
Funeral.
Oh, that was Cody's whimpering laughter in the background, ladies and gentlemen. Greg Cody limping in with a tinny laugh at the word drunk when I meant to say dunk. Greg, how are you doing today? I see that there's a third straight back in my day ready. I can't believe it.
It's hard to believe. I'm doing it just for you, Dan, just to get you off my ass. How about that?
Okay.
It's ready.
All right. Well, let's do it right now. Are you ready to do it right now?
Serious?
I am ready. Yes, I'm ready to do it right now. You haven't been available to us. I think, though, that we should have you call in on a landline. I think that we should continue to do this this trick where you're not doing the show the way you've been doing the show. People, we're on a hot streak with you, 2 straight weeks of you being great. Call in on the landline. Stand up. Get in your performer mode because, as you know, that whenever a performer or an entertainer is around, they're on a stage. They're never just sitting up there. Greg Cody explained that to us the other day. So are you ready to go right now, Greg Cody? And what is your level of confidence in your back in my day? Okay, he muted himself. Of course.
He's also clean shaven.
No, I'm fairly confident. I don't know what number to call, though.
I'll give you a call. You're clean shaven.
Okay,
for
that's
the first
perfect
time since we've done this whole Zoom thing, I don't think I've seen you with sporting a clean shaven face. It was a little jarring. You kind of look like when Tim Allen decided to shave for the first time in the Santa Claus.
Right.
And he revealed just like a very puffy face. Your face is a lot puffier now than I recall it being.
That's a compliment. Thank you. I appreciate that.
That is not a compliment. Nice. Just cough right there in the mic. Don't let us bother
sorry
you at all.
Chris, mute, unmute.
Yeah,
I can't keep it straight.
I know. It's very hard to be professional. Put it on the poll, please, Chris, at Levitard Show. I don't even remember what it is that I was going to ask you.
Is it a
puffy
compliment?
Is a puffy face a compliment?
If I go a while without shaving and then I shave, my face is also puffy post-shave. Have you noticed that? Like, does that happen to you? Well, you haven't shaved
face
in a while.
My face is always puffy.
Yeah, should not a bad person to ask.
I am not shaving my face in order to conceal the amount of puffy that there is in my face, and it doesn't seem to be working. I love that Mike is now calling Greg, but Greg doesn't know how to pick up a phone.
Wait,
doesn't
where's
know
my phone?
There it is.
Oh, Jesus.
No, I've misplaced my phone. I got to go find it. Hang on.
All right. Excellent.
Okay.
Yeah, we're on
all
the
right
air, Greg. Don't mind us. Just go ahead and just keep living life at your own leisurely pace.
I appreciate that he didn't mute the microphone because now you can hear him ruffling.
All right, I got it.
Yeah.
Hey, Greg.
It's under a piece of paper.
Mute your microphone.
All right. Way to be professional, right, Greg. Thank you for all of your good
his
work.
His phone was on vibrate.
So before we get to Greg Cody's back in my day, the Miami Heat lose to the Clippers last night, and that is a box score, Stugatz, that you do not expect the Miami Heat to be losing a basketball game when Jimmy Butler goes for his 7th triple-double. Are you surprised at all that Jimmy Butler already has more triple-doubles as a member of the Miami Heat than Dwayne Wade ever had?
Yes, wow. Yes, I am very surprised. How can you not be surprised by that? But they lost that game. I didn't stay up for that game. But, I mean, Paul George is out. Kawhi Leonard was out too, wasn't he?
Well, listen to how they lost the game because this stat sheet is not what you normally lose. And they simply can't beat good teams. They're 1-10 against teams that are 500 or better. You didn't expect them to win at Utah, but when Tyler Hero, and I'm doing this from memory, so forgive me if I have a number wrong here or there, but when Tyler Hero is 11 for 17, when Bam Adebayo is 12 of 15, And when Jimmy Butler gives you a seventh triple-double, it is hard to lose that game. But the way you lose that game is they couldn't make any threes. I mean, they shot 20%, 22% from three. And so they lose to the Clippers. And I would be a little bit concerned about the Miami Heat because the teams in the East have gotten better. And the Miami Heat don't appear to have gotten any better.
Hero was 11 of 20, by the way, so he must have missed some shots late in that game. But for the most, yes, you look at that box score and you would expect that the Heat would win that game. That's interesting that they're sitting here at 11 and 16 after going to the NBA Finals. It makes you kind of question what happened last year inside of that bubble, does it not?
What it makes me do is it makes me wonder a little bit if their shooting was otherworldly like everybody's was because that bubble favored pristine and pure shooting teams. They have not been together most of the season. That matters. That said, last year, if they had gone to Utah, I would have expected them to win the game. I could have been wrong and probably would have been wrong, but I would have thought they had a chance to win the game. I didn't think they had any chance the way that Utah is playing, even full strength. I didn't think they had any chance. And they didn't have any chance to beat Utah.
Much better Heat teams have lost the old Utah-LA Clippers back-to-back on the road. That I'm not overreacting to that. I am overreacting to when Jimmy Butler first latched back onto the Miami Heat. They seemed to struggle and drop games against. I know Charlotte's improved.
Washington.
But those were some really bad losses. And then they kind of hit their stride a little bit with that four game. Sounds ridiculous to say, just a four game winning streak, but you saw signs of.
Well, I kept reading about how Jimmy Butler's back and he's brought the winning with him and he won't let them lose, except every once in a while they lose back to back Charlotte, or they lose back to back Utah and the Clippers.
Yeah, but not Jimmy Butler's fault. They're reverting to bad habits. They're turning the ball over and they're not shooting threes as well. That's the recipe for this Heat team whenever they lose. And that's doing the exact opposite. Limiting turnovers and shooting very well from the outside is how the Miami Heat won the Eastern Conference in the bubble. I don't think this is a bubble thing. They can get sloppy at times outside of the bubble. They've proven that. I don't really understand how the bubble, being outside of the bubble, increases your turnover margin. I really don't understand that part. They need to stop being so sloppy and giving other teams pick sixes and easy buckets.
When do you start getting concerned? 27 games, 72 game season, right? So when do you start? And you're five games out of the two seed, essentially. So
the rest of the league, the rest of the Eastern Conference has kind of played ball. No team in the NBA has been affected more by COVID protocol than the Miami Heat and injury. That is factual. They haven't had games postponed. The one game that they had postponed is because I know they didn't have eight available to play, but they would have won that game in Boston. They've had tough breaks, but I think they're just 2.5 games out of the four seed.
Okay, that's all well and fine. A lot of people are doing those rationalizations, but again, they are 1-10 against the good teams in the league, and I think it's pretty clear Philadelphia is a good deal better, and the Nets are a good deal better. So I ask you this question, Mike, even though you are Heat homer guy, you love the Miami Heat, you are in the tank for the Miami Heat. Do you like the Miami Heat's chances in a seven-game series against the Nets or Philadelphia? Would you expect them to win? They certainly, I don't think, would be favored in those series.
I do like what I saw out of those two individual matchups, even though the Miami Heat came out on the short end of those. Those teams have bad habits themselves, so I wouldn't write them off. For me, like, getting in the playoffs though is my main concern right now. You'd have to be insane to pick the Miami Heat outright right now based on what you've seen both from the Sixers and Nets and the Miami Heat themselves. They're turning the ball over too much. If they do not fix that, they are going to look, it's a conversation as to whether or not they're going to make the playoffs, let alone go deep into the playoffs. If they don't fix this turnover issue, which I think might also be a Tyler Hero problem, I just don't like him bringing the ball up court. He's a playmaker from the two position. That's fine. Dwayne Wade was. We did this with Dwayne Wade's rookie season, where Dwayne Wade was forced to play point guard, and he was turnover prone and making bad decisions. So I think they need to solidify that point guard spot. Dragic dealing with injuries, COVID protocols. Avery Bradley was supposed to be a nice rotational piece. You barely had him.
Wait a minute. You just said dealing with injuries. And the last time I told you about Goran Dragic, you blew a bunch of smoke in my face about how Goran Dragic wasn't injured.
Yeah, he wasn't at the time. He wasn't. He was good in that game.
Mike, expect Goran Dragic to have some injury the rest of his career. Expect him to have something that plagues that body after that many miles. Something is always going to be a little bit off. He's how old is he?
Yeah, it's just hard. I feel for Coach Spo. Every time you think that you have your full rotation, there's a contact tracing thing that pulls Tyler Hero out for one inconvenient game. It's very difficult. They need to find a way to rattle off four in a row again, and then they might have home court in the first round.
Mike, he's not the only one dealing with that stuff, though. I mean,
I understand what you're saying. He's not, but I don't think there's a coach in the NBA that's dealt with it to the level that Miami has. I know I'm making excuses. It is an excuse, but it's also an explanation as to why Miami isn't as good. And those individual players, when they've been out on the court together, healthy, they just haven't been performing the same way. And it adds fuel to the fire, which is out there, this national narrative that they were a fluke last season. It's hard to disagree with that notion when you see this team fully healthy, still struggling to get by the likes of Charlotte.
No one's beating that Nets team. If they're healthy, no one's going to beat that Nets team.
They don't play any defense. A team that's that bad at defense has never won the championship. You could say who cares, and I'm with you in terms of enjoying watching that team play.
Yep.
You have knee-jerked violently on this because I'm pretty sure you said it would never work there, and now you've just made them the champion after 20 games when they're playing the worst defense in the history of the sport.
Just when those three are out there together, Harden, Kyrie, and Kevin Durant, and listen, there are questions with Kevin Durant and his health, but when they're out there together, like, they'll figure out the defense. They don't need to be great. They just need to be good. They just need to be solid because they could score 125
points a game. They're beating all the good teams. They are. They're like 10-1 or something against all the good teams.
I think their record post-Harden trade is the same record that the Miami Heat have with Jimmy Butler on their team this year. We do a lot of like hyperventilating over the Brooklyn Nets, but they'll also go through the motions against bad teams too. They can turn it on offensively. We trust them. You can understand why they coast, but you can't turn it on defensively with those three stars. I actually fear Philadelphia more than I fear Brooklyn.
So let me give you some of these stats here, because the Heat are 28-31 outside of the bubble since the start of 2020. So they've not been good. They've been a sub-500 team outside the bubble. They are, as I mentioned, I think before last night, they were 1-9 against 500 teams or better. Now they're 1-10. They did beat the Celtics at the buzzer. They forced overtime against Philly. But other than that, against the good teams, they're getting blown out. And they've only beaten bad teams. It's the Wizards three times. It's the Knicks. It's the Pistons with the non-dunking Blake Griffin. It's the Kings. It's the Pelicans. It's the Thunder. They beat the Bucks. They beat the Raptors, and they beat the Rockets.
The Knicks are a sixth seed, I will remind you. So
yeah.
Relax.
The Celtics also. The Celtics aren't getting hit with what the Miami Heat are getting hit. Now, the Miami Heat are a little worse, but the Celtics have had a very disappointing year this season. And it was bullshit what happened in Philadelphia. Philadelphia shouldn't have won that game. It was a terrible call. Joel Embiid carried and said that he goes to the free throw line. It was bullshit.
Kemba's been pretty bad for them.
Terrible
right?
contract.
Chris Cody, are you worried about your Miami Heat? There is no Billy today. He is out. Greg Cody, before the microphones got turned on, or maybe they were on at the time, called him Billy Ill. Greg Cody, I think, is now ready to do his Back in My Day. Chris, are you willing to say that you are officially worried about your hometown basketball team?
I'm a little worried, but I really haven't been listening to you guys. I've just been watching my dad pace in his office. It's really odd. He just cannot sit still.
All right, so here he is. Let's go ahead and do this Back in My Day. I wondered what he was doing, because he certainly wasn't like listening to the conversation in a way that made us feel like we could go to him on anything. Greg, I felt like now he is peering into the Zoom with his hand cupped to his ear, not helpfully, because it's not a visual medium. So, Greg, do you have any Heat thoughts? Because you weren't in the Zoom at any point. You were just pacing around an office that hasn't had a single thing moved in it since 1984.
Right, that's true. It is a 30-year-old office. The Heat, I think Mike mentioned it. They're feeding the narrative that last season was sort of a fluke, that they lucked into the finals, and did it really happen? You know, because the thing about the Heat this year, it's uncharacteristic, because I think of Eric Spoelstra teams as being disciplined. And this team is a sloppy team. They give away the ball. They turn it over. They give away games. I'm just not very impressed. I know, you know, the last time I looked at the standings, they're one game out of playoff pace, which is sort of insane. But I just don't see them making any sort of I think they will get into the playoffs. I don't see them making any sort of a deep run. And I can't figure it out because, yeah, they've had injuries and they've had some of the COVID upheaval. But I think every team has. I mean, I just can't see that as an excuse. I really can't.
Chris, how do you feel about your father's performance right now? Because the way this works, and discovering the last couple of weeks that Greg Cody is better when wandering around his office speaking into a phone, I'm torn because when he wanders around and I get to see that pot belly from the side, and it feels like every phone conversation I've had with him since 1990, where it's not totally clear whether he knows he's being the performer and the entertainer on the radio or whether he's just picking up the phone and talking to me about something that happened in sports. Like, am I wrong about this? Because I feel like he's just wandering around, and there it is, and he's just forgetting he's on the radio, and he's just sort of talking the way that he would talk if someone was calling his home on a landline.
And he's just standing, so we can't see his lower half, thank God. And we can't really see his face, so all we see is just his gut. All right, please stop. Now he's lifting his leg.
Those are terrible basketball shorts. Greg, how old are those blue, gray, and
I'm guessing
white?
Those are new.
No way. Chris Cody, are those shorts older than you are? Are the shorts your father is wearing... I'm pretty sure those are of the Minneapolis Lakers, I believe those shorts are, from the 1960s.
What's wrong with that?
Yes, they're terrible. They're absolutely terrible.
How would I explain to the audience, Greg, first of all, the color coordination of what you're presently wearing, would you please stand back from the Zoom so everyone can drink in just what it is you got going on?
Okay, I can't tell. There's something wrong with this thing here.
Yeah, bad, go. Good. Oh,
nothing
God.
Wrong with it. You can just move your camera. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it.
I mean, he is at home. It's 8:24 in the morning, Dan. I mean, he doesn't need to, like, match. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah, what am I wearing, a tuxedo? What do you want from me?
The Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gatz is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Keeping things bottled up can feel like carrying a weight that gets heavier with time. Whether it's talking to a trusted friend, journaling, or seeking professional help, finding ways to let out your thoughts and feelings can bring relief and help you navigate challenges more effectively. Remember, it's okay to reach out for help when you need it. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DLB today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DLB.
Time now for Greg Cody's Back in My Day.
And now it is time to take a trip down memory lane. Here's your guy, Greg Cody, with Back in My Day.
Shoes. So I get an online alert I didn't ask for over the weekend. Might have been an ad or something. Popped up like an official announcement or bulletin, said Nike Air Griffey Max 1 Freshwater, available Monday, 10 a.m. Eastern. What the hell? I Googled it to find out it's some sort of a new but retro sneaker. Retro means they're recycling an old product, but at today's prices. I got a kick out of the precise announcement of the minute it would go on sale, as if thousands of people were queued up in a digital line to be the first on their block to buy the new old sneaker.
They are.
Which sadly, undoubtedly, was true. When did the once lowly sneaker become the trendy superstar behind a red velvet rope as adoring fans swooned holding up fistfuls of dollars to throw at the preening shoe? Blame it on Air Jordans in the mid-80s, designer athlete footwear then as now, exorbitantly overpriced then as now, pandering to our desire for status symbols head to toe, and then as now, the very finest example of Chinese, Vietnamese, or Indonesian craftsmanship. Women always used to get the sexist rap for being shoeaholics, for having dozens of shoes, even though you can only wear one pair at a time. It's men too, of course. My wife has a lawyer friend who has not a walk-in closet devoted exclusively to dress shoes, but a guest bedroom. I swear it. You know how many shoes Greg Cody has and wears in a given year? Three. A pair of stuffed-up black dress shoes.
Not three
pairs. A
pair
of sneakers whose brand I couldn't even tell you. And a pair of Sperry Topsider deck shoes I live in and wish to be buried or cremated in. My wife's choice. But it's trendy sneakers that have become the status, routinely priced at $170 or much more, the price driven up by hell-bent millennial demand. Did you know that in 1957, a pair of Converse sneakers sold for $395? In today's dollars, that would be about $27. This tells you the ridiculous markup on designer sneakers and the gullibility of folks willing to pay it. It has become a psychological obsession. There is a website called sneakernews.com. Why? There is an app where you enter into a drawing to be the first allowed to buy a new product. There is a gruesome new word in the lexicon. It was invented to justify charging you a month's rent for glorified sneakers. The word is athleisure wear. They probably had that in mind when they made the Balenciaga Triple S sneaker.
Greg,
retail,
hold on.
$950.
Greg, hold on. Hold on. Just catch your breath. I just want you to be okay. I want you to be okay. Just go ahead and catch your breath. You can pick it up right there. It'll be tied together seamlessly.
It's a long walk.
You're pacing and you're a little winded from pacing. Just catch your breath and I will talk for a second and just marvel at the fact that all of us thought that you owned only three shoes, not three pairs of shoes, just three shoes.
Well, three pair. So, yeah, I'm good now.
Okay.
Okay.
If I ever see a pair of $1,000 sneakers on someone's feet, you know where you're going to see them next? Dangling from a telephone wire. Folks, our feet don't deserve that kind of luxury. Our feet have done nothing to earn it. They're feet. They smell. They're ugly. They need their nails clipped. Also, feet are dumb. You could fashion a pair of shoes made out of cardboard and your feet wouldn't say a word. You know, when I was around 10 or 12 years old, Wild Bill Cody would drive me from 1440 to the local Tom McCann, and I'd buy two pair of high-top cloth kids for $8.99. That was after I outgrew the hand-me-downs from my older brother, Uncle Dick Cody. Dial it back and start embracing the cheapest footwear you can find, because, here it comes, it's good for the soul. I'm Greg Cody, and that's how it was back in my day.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Thank you, Roy.
All right. I have a handful of questions. Okay. There he's taking a vigorous sip.
Yes.
He deserves it after a successful back in my day in which he threatened, I'm pretty sure, anyone who owns a good pair of shoes that he will find you, he will take your shoes and he will throw them toward a telephone wire. That seems like a completely empty threat by you.
No, it's true, because when I was a kid, I don't know if, you know, you look up at a telephone wire now and you never see a pair of shoes hanging from it. When I was a kid, I swear, that was the first indication of bullying. The early bullies stole your shoes and tossed them up, you know, tied the laces together and tossed them up until, you know, Sugats knows what I mean.
No, but it's still got a meaning. Whittingham, I put it on the poll. Do you know what it means when there are sneakers hanging from a telephone wire? It has a meaning. It is, I don't
like
know.
What type of meaning? It's a there, prank.
No,
it's,
there's a reason that
I think
is
it means
done.
You got beat up, right? Like you got picked on, someone bullied you, and they took your shoes.
No, I believe that that is a neighborhood, some sort of symbol that people communicate through.
I would tell people every time you see a pair of shoes on a power line, it means I just had sex, because I was a misogynist.
Okay, so Greg, can you do me a favor, please? I've got two questions for you. One, why do you theorize that you are winded?
I really wasn't winded. Here's the thing, though, and you stopped me at a proper time, because I guess I was sort of getting winded, but here's the thing. When I'm reading a back of my day, I'm reading fairly quickly. I'm reading a lot of words. You know, I'm trying to keep a cadence. I'm trying not to stumble. And it's just, it's a lot of pressure on the lungs. And once I'm over with it, I'm done with it, I do exhale literally and figuratively. You know, it's like, whew, that type thing.
All right. Put it on the poll, Winningham, please, at Le Batard Show. Is reading back in my day a lot of pressure on the lungs?
I have some. I hear you, Greg. I have some info on shoes dangling from a phone line. It is believed that they dangle from the phone line over power lines to signal the location of a crack house. How about that? So it is. It's like marking your gang territory, kind of. Yeah, you're right. I'm surprised by that. I had no idea.
Greg, do me a favor, please.
Yeah.
Just read the two sentences after Wild Bill Cody, because I believe them to be as good an ancient, musty, cobweb two sentences that you have put together in Back in My Day. Wherever it is that it started with Wild Bill Cody, who is your dad, you refer to him. I love that you refer to him as Wild Bill Cody.
Wild
Chris,
Bill.
I love that your grandfather, I've met your...
He could not have been any less
I
wild.
Have met your grandfather. He is the opposite of whatever Wild Bill Cody connotes to the audience. Uncle Dick, however, is every bit what you think he is. Give us what you have here on the beginning of Wild Bill Cody.
You know, when I was around 10, 12 years old, Wild Bill Cody would drive me from 1440 to the local Tom McCann, and I'd buy two pair of high-top cloth Keds for $8.99. That was after I outgrew the hand-me-downs from my older brother, Uncle Dick Cody. All true. All true. $8.99 for a pair of shoes.
Fantastic.
For two pair of shoes. Four shoes for $9. And they were great, man. Those high top Keds. Why don't you save things like that? If I still had my high top, I used to have a Beetle wig back in the early to mid 60s. I was like 11 years old walking around my house with a Beetle wig. You should Google Beetle wig because it was like a black bowl cut wig that I actually used to wear in my house. How I wish I had that, right? That's it. I'm out of material.
Chris, I told you, that he thinks it's just a phone call. He forgets he's on the radio and thinks he's just talking to us.
Gold.
It for some reason, I went from Ked high tops to the Beetle wig, because we're talking about the same era, really. You know, that was my heyday, 19... I would say 1962.
These are the phone conversations.
64.
Summer requires extraordinary hydration that's built for everyday dehydrating moments. Especially in Miami, we know that it gets very, very hot. You go outside for 6 seconds, you're sweating, and you're possibly dehydrated. Liquid IV hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients with 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in a single stick. It's clear why Liquid IV is the number one powdered hydration brand in America. Guys, I love Liquid IV. I get the sugar-free lemon-lime version. They should have my picture on it, how much I drink it, how much I use it. The sugar-free has no bad stuff, only good stuff. I use it when I go to the gym, when I'm playing hoops, when I'm going out on the boat, mix it in with a little bit of ice. Keeps me hydrated all day long. Just tear, pour, and live more. With 1 stick of Liquid IV plus 16 ounces of water, hydrates better than with water alone. Turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code DAN, D-A-N, at liquidiv.com.
You guys watch Daytona? You guys watch Daytona?
No,
What an ending. You serious? You didn't watch It's America's Great Race? You didn't watch the end of Daytona?
No.
Cause was set on
5-hour delay.
There was basically the big one on the final lap, and it rewarded anybody that stayed up damn near close to 1 a.m. Who were watching that entire rain-delayed race. Oh, my God. Michael McDowell. Who saw that coming? Right? Right?
Nighttime racing has a little bit of a different feel to it, does it not?
I love it under the lights, Dan. Yeah, that's what really separates Daytona apart from a lot of the other tracks that don't have lights. The fact that it has lights.
Yeah. That's good expertise.
Who's Mike McDowell, by the way?
He's winner. Your Daytona 500 winner.
Champion.
Yeah, he was like in third, and then Slowey Logano, Slowey Joey Logano, because that's what people call him that don't like him. He was getting pushed by, I believe it was Harvick. Harvick's in the Busch Light 4, right? So Harvick is pushing him, and they're basically bumper to bumper right there. Slowey Joey is doing a great job defending everybody else, and then bam, fireballs in the air, and third place McDowell just comes racing in behind, and under caution takes America's Great Race, the Daytona 500. And I'd tell you, NASCAR is on to something. If they stop competing directly with every other sporting event ever, stick to the 1 a.m. windows or like Monday nights. I saw it last year when Dega got delayed and there was like a Monday afternoon race in the middle of the pandemic when everyone's dying for something to watch. NASCAR can be back if they just avoid popular TV windows.
Dega.
A Slowey Joey is a wonderful insult for NASCAR. Cody, were you going to offer something there or just sort of preen around the room with your belly out? I fear doing the back in my day that early. This is always the risk in doing back in my day that early.
You've lost him, yeah.
You've already seen that he's not paying attention and he's wandering around and he got his star turn. That's a bad mistake by me.
I am paying attention. I'm not a huge NASCAR fan. There's nothing worse than a race ending under a caution flag. But what I couldn't get my mind off of was the night racing thing, because NASCAR cars do not have headlights. I don't know if anybody knows that. The headlights are painted on. They're drawn on. They're like decals of headlights, but they don't actually have lights. So that always struck me as a little bit strange.
Is that true? Put that on the poll.
I have a hard time believing
that. Put that on the poll, Whittingham. Did you know that NASCAR cars don't have headlights, that those headlights are merely painted on?
I can't believe you thought those were real. They don't trade paint anymore, by the way, which is really disappointing, especially when they get to Dega, because you could always count on a good paint trading.
What is the point of painting them on, though?
Well, they don't paint them, well, because it looks weird if you don't have headlights. They're kind of, right. think of the grill of a car, like a face. A face needs eyes, otherwise it's very unsettling, Dan.
But you have nighttime racing
now. Yeah, because, like, look what happened to Dave Blatt. Like, it all was jarring. They don't paint them anymore. They got wraps on these cars now. Which actually leads to very inconsistent designs for certain car numbers. Because you could always count on number two, that's a blue deuce. That's my guy, Brad Keselowski. And then he just shows up in like a black car, a yellow car. I like the brand loyalty of knowing what my car is going to look like, race in, race out. This wrap shit, it's got to go.
Chris, let's go ahead and address this, because the look on your face is exactly the same as the look on my face. Over the summer, Mike Ryan decided to become a gearhead in a way that jarred all of us.
A douchey NASCAR guy.
Yeah, he likes to pick up. He does like to pick up these douchey fandoms, and so now
he's gambling.
Yeah, that's part of it. But Did you text me? Hey, Bubba Wallace, first black driver ever to lead for one lap of the Daytona 500, which I thought was such a weird stat for people to throw out there. Am I the only one who thought that was
weird? Well, it's a big step. I mean, you had a black driver leading America's race for a single lap. Baby steps, Dan. I mean, a lap.
He changed teams. He was a hot free agent. I don't really think McDowell won this race so much as Denny Hamlin blew it, right? Greg, you with me on this one?
I didn't watch the race, Mike. I'm not going to fib. I obviously know the result. I know how it ended, but I did not watch a second of that race.
And what was our champion? What was the reigning champ? The number nine, Chase Elliott, you know, son of Bill Elliott. Awesome Bill from Dawsonville. You familiar?
Oh, Jesus.
Forgive me, because Greg Cody did not watch this race. Let me throw something into his wheelhouse in the event that you want to come back and engage us again on the Daytona 500. But locally, in this local hour, I know that Greg Cody wanted to talk about David Beckham. He's questioning a financial deal of David Beckham's, and I wanted to get that out here locally in the local hour.
He wrote that. He wrote an article. You put on a journalism hat, Greg Cody, and you got to investigating Qatar and their human rights record.
Wait a second, though. I can't believe you went past the paywall. First of all, I think it's Qatar. I've been corrected on that before. I pronounce it Qatar as well, but yeah, I think it's
Qatar. I've heard Cotter, like welcome back, Cotter. Tomato, tomato.
You went behind the paywall and you found a Greg Cody column, or you just saw that he was tweeting out his column?
It was weird. I struck gold because it was an investigative piece. The paywall got lifted and I was able to read every single thing. I don't know if I was like in a dead zone.
Well, how was it? Tell me about it. Before Greg Cody gives us his opinions on his own column, why don't you tell me what your opinions are on his column?
You know, I was surprised he did it.
He's surprised he worked?
was surprised that he actually did a journalistic piece. That was my main takeaway. It wasn't very revelatory because this story has actually been out there for a while, but Greg did what I believe you journos call a follow-up. And it was interesting to see that old story brought back to light.
It's guitar, by the way. You it play the guitar. Yeah.
Right. My guitar gently weeps. No, this was not a breaking news story by me. I was reacting to it was actually reported in the Sunday Mail, the Daily Mail of London. So it was that's a legitimate publication. It's a big story in Europe and in the UK. And I think it deserves to be a big story down here. You know, Beckham, I think, risks sort of a PR nightmare if he takes the equivalent of $15 million from Qatar and just smiles through some of their human rights violations, such as, you know, if you're gay in Qatar, you're illegal and you can be thrown in jail. So, and not to mention their rights against women who were only recently allowed to get a driver's license without a man saying it was okay. You know, it's just it's a country stuck in the 19th century in a lot of ways. And I think if you're Beckham, if you're going to take that money, you can't smile through who this host is. You have to sort of speak up for human rights while you're doing it. And the other thing is, Mike, you're a soccer fan. You know this. The U.S. Department of Justice accused Qatar of just massive bribery to FIFA to get this World Cup because it's a small Middle Eastern country with brutally hot summers without a great background in soccer as a soccer country. And here they are hosting the World Cup despite their human rights violations. So it's a weird situation for international soccer, and for Beckham to sort of foist himself in the middle of it is sort of weird. So I just wanted to write about it.
FIFA has to rework their entire calendar because the summers are so hot. They're not actually having the World Cup during the summer. They're having it in the middle of everyone's club seasons. But this story and this controversy really hasn't stopped David Beckham from taking Qatar money. He's an ambassador for that World Cup. He's still working with them personally. What was called into question was, do we actually take the sponsorship and throw it across the Inter Miami jersey as a jersey sponsor, to which there are more complicated geopolitical reasons why you don't want, outside of the obvious human rights record, there's ties to Cuba that would make it problematic for, say, Jorge Mas, who is a Cuban owner. So there were all sorts of questions. But just because he's not taking the money for Inter Miami doesn't mean he's not profiting from it. He still is working as an ambassador for this World Cup.
Quantify for me, Cody, what PR nightmare means, because I want to understand when you say this is a PR nightmare to just smile through it. If Beckham, who always gets away with everything with a smile, just smiles through it, then what?
It's a smudge on
No, real terms.
Miami.
No, but real
Who's
terms.
Gonna care?
Real terms though, Greg. Like what is it going to cost them? Dollars? They're running a business in a difficult time. They're pandemic. It's a difficult time in all kinds of business, and all sorts of people are making all sorts of principle compromises in the name of a different kind of spelling on principle. Like, this is something businesses all over the place are making these deals. We've talked before about the idea that you will not find any place in this country at the high end that isn't making deals with China. So when you say PR nightmare, quantify it for me. Somebody tell me what that means.
Well, I will tell you that we've asked David Sampson about this, and David Sampson was a president of the Marlins, and that was a team that notoriously struggled with its sponsorship sales. Qatar money was always there for them. That was the last resort, and he would turn to them, and he would put a PR nightmare tax on it. Okay. There is obviously going to be some heat that comes along with dealing with this government, this country. So I'm going to upcharge them. And they never actually hit the number for him. Otherwise, you know, basically what he's saying, morality is for sale up to a certain number.
Look, I can't quantify it because I don't know if this happens. I don't know what, if any, sponsors are going to disassociate from Inter Miami because of Beckham's ties to Qatar. But you're right to mention China, and it happens all over sports. You know, the NBA's in bed with China. You know, Mickey Arison sending cruise ships to Cuba. I mean, there's all kind of ways that teams in sports risk that kind of smudge. But in the case of Beckham, I just think it's a bad look on the face of it if he doesn't use it as an opportunity to speak out. And I don't know what his financial arrangement is, but if I'm Beckham, I don't mind taking $15 million from Qatar as long as I'm free to say, you know what, I don't agree with everything they do. I certainly don't agree with their punitive stance with the LGBTQ community. You know, if he doesn't do that, if he's just mute on the subject, then it's tacit approval of the country he's taking all this money from. So when I say it's a PR nightmare, I mean it on the face of it. You know, by him associating himself with this country and not speaking out, it's a bad look. And if you don't think it's a bad look, I don't know what to say, because it's a bad look on the face of it. And I'm sure you don't agree. Maybe you do.
But then his actual face smiles. Sorry for the phlegm. I had to fight through that. Yeah,
so distracting. I don't even know the point. $5.
I was going to say that
he wanted to get in there with the sentence, but then he smiles and it all goes away. But he distracted us with.
I don't believe there's an owner in sports who can get through a bad PR crisis as well as David Beckham because he simply smiles. It's a great smile.
What happens? Yeah, but what happens when you get past the smile and you start after
the substance?
Yeah, that
I feel right.
He still smiles.
I feel right after that is where David Beckham, when he looks deep inside, has a midlife crisis. I think that's what happens. It's right there when he's looking back.
His smile's no longer working.
So it was reported by The Sun that it was in upwards of $180 million, but take that with a grain of salt because The Sun doesn't have the greatest reporting record. That's obviously franchise-changing money coming into MLS. I don't know if he could get away with it in another market, but it's particularly sticky of a situation when it's in South Florida.
Well, this is the part that I wanted to ask you, because PR nightmare and smudge, those things don't mean anything. They're just words written by a columnist in an old-timey newspaper that don't have anything in the way of meaningful impact. However, in Miami, the one place where you can get hurt financially if you land on the wrong side of the Cuba stuff, and forgive me because I don't know all of the egregious human rights violations in Qatar or Qatar. I still don't believe that it's Qatar.
It's Qatar, Dan.
I feel like I've been corrected on that. Yeah, but I don't trust you and your pronunciation and your reading. Regardless, the sketchy human rights stuff is something that you will also find in China. I believe that Miamians are more single issue that way when you talk about the hardline Cuban people willing to hold back dollars. And so now I'm asking you, and by the way, MLS is not necessarily something that is supported by Cubans. There are a lot of other Hispanics here that I believe do a better job of supporting soccer in Miami than Cubans do. But you guys need to explain to me what the risk is on Cuban dollars being withheld in Miami, because that's something empirical. That would be real.
Well, the Moss family has a lot of political influence, and a lot of the people, if you see where they're contributed, whether it be hosting fundraisers or contributing with their dollars, this would be a bit of a hypocritical spot for the Moss family, given Qatar and Cuba's close financial agreement. There's a lot of aid. There's an embassy in Havana, a Qatari embassy in Havana. These countries support one another. And it would be problematic for Jorge Moss specifically, given his stance on certain political issues. So you're right in that there's a much wider net than just Cuban soccer fans in South Florida. However, there is a lot of Cuban soccer fans in South Florida, even though it's not the major sport in that country. A big amount of their season ticket base, I imagine, is at least part Cuban. I think it's more political pressure that Jorge Moss specifically would face, and he probably doesn't want those problems.
Whittingham, you sent me a bunch of links last night linked to how it is that Qatar ended up getting this World Cup. They're trying to legitimize themselves by having no regard whatsoever for what the dollar is worth. Like, they're simply trying to buy their way through every principle that they can, and the virus during a pandemic is going to allow them to just throw money at things. So give some of the information, Chris, that you were sending me last night when we were talking about this particular link to this particular problematic country.
Well, the thing with Qatar is it's not even just in soccer. It's in sports, where they just want to basically create a reputation out of nothing. They are a country that really nobody knew anything about until they inserted themselves into sports, and they wanted to kind of build this industry. So, like, they hosted, like, the World Track Championships. They host the Club World Cup this year. They're going to host the actual Men's World Cup in 2022. They want to build, like, a sports industry that's, like, $20 million. They have a majority...
$20 billion.
Did I say million? $20 billion. You know, they own a majority stake in Paris Saint-Germain. They have a sports network that is all over the world, including in the United States, be in sports. Like, they want to assert themselves as a country using the vehicle of sports. And, you know, we don't know. I mean, there are many ill effects as a result of that, including kind of the political mess that they created at FIFA and a political mess that they can create in other areas.
Cody, are you just breathing into your phone? Is that what you're doing? Were you doing some house cleaning while Whittingham was talking? What were you picking up noisily? And why are you breathing into the phone as if you don't know that you're loud and breathy?
I was picking up the remnant of my back of my day, which was on the ground. I like a neat house, so I was literally doing a little bit of housekeeping while he was speaking, listening to every word, paying rapt attention. As for the breathing thing, I find it helps me stay alive when I breathe. You know, it's a thing that I've developed a habit of doing. You know, may it continue for a while longer. You know,
it seems like it's not.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.